Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 9 of the OI, an offside hockey talk podcast with yours truly, Jamie Anstey. My guest is entering into his 10th season as a head athletic therapist for the Edmonton Oil Kings, which is in the Western Hockey League here in Canada. Also had a stint with the Tri-City Americans, also in the WHL, Western Hockey League. Was also a member of the Oil Kings staff who enjoyed WHL championships in 2012 and 2014 and a Memorial Cup championship in 2014, CHL's top prize. The Mount Pearl native served as an athletic therapist with Hockey Canada for the U-17 Pacific team in 2012 and won gold at the 2013 Ivan Hlinka Memorial Tournament. He was named athletic therapist of Team Canada for the IHF World Junior Hockey Championships in Finland in 2016, and again in Montreal and Toronto in 2017, where the team captured a silver medal. In 2018, he captured a gold medal with Team Canada at the IHF World Junior Hockey Championships in Buffalo. Also a member of the staff at the 2014 Top Prospects Game, the 2016 CIBC Canada-Russia Series, and most recently, it was a member of Team Orr at the 2019 Sherwin-Williams CHL NHL Top Prospects Game, and also was athletic therapist for Team Canada at the 2021 World Junior Hockey Championships, which was held in Edmonton, Alberta. Brian Cheeseman.
Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Jamie. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. How's the weather in Edmonton? I believe you're in... You're residing in Edmonton right now, as you are with the Edmonton Oil Kings and the WHL. So tell me how Edmonton is right now.
You know what? We've had a pretty mild winter from an Edmonton and an Alberta standpoint, but we're making up for it now, man. It's cold. It's plug in your car season in Edmonton right now. So this is the first day of what they're saying is going to be about a week-long cold snap, but we've been spoiled, so if it's only going to last for a week, I'll take it. I'll gladly take it.
I have friends in Saskatchewan, and it's pretty cold up there right now, and we'll get into the WHL talk here in a little bit, but I got you on the offside hockey talk for a reason. I want to talk about your World Junior experience, and also you're now with the Edmonton Oil Kings. You've been there quite a while as the athletic therapist. But for everyone here in the East Coast, tell us how your journey started, where it all began. And you're from Newfoundland. So what made you move away from the Rock?
You know what? It's funny. No matter, there's that old saying, no matter where you go in the world, there's someone from Newfoundland there, right? So I joke with everybody back home that I'm just another Newfoundlander who ended up working in Alberta. Unlike most, I'm not in the oil and gas or trades industry. I really commend those people, you know, who work on the turnaround and spend all that time away from their family and, you know, time away from home and the place they love and the people they love. But yeah, Jamie, for me, you know, I don't think if I had a time machine and I could go back to, you know, high school and early university and know that I was going to be in the position that I'm in right now. But for me, it was happenstance. I was kind of a little bit adrift at Mon. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. I thought I was going to do something in the geology, earth sciences field, because obviously the offshore oil industry was starting to boom in the late 90s and early 2000s back home. And that was my initial focus. I always had a pretty good handle on science and stuff in high school. And you know what, man, I got in there and it just wasn't for me. And I remember going home and telling mom and dad that evening at the dinner table, you know, how's your day? What'd you do? Well, hey, sorry guys, I dropped out of university today and don't worry, I got a full refund. We're all good there. I got all my money back. And so my dad was like, well, you know what, that's good for you. Like it's an important decision to make, but you can stay here. You can stay under our roof as long as you get some full-time work. And I was working part-time as a security person and usher at Memorial Stadium in St. John's. And eventually that turned into Mile One Stadium and went to work full-time there, 12-hour shifts. And as luck would have it, I got stationed on the St. John's Maple Leafs dressing room. And was during practice one day. I ended up striking up a conversation with their athletic therapist, Nick Adijib. And we just, I got talking to him about what he did for a job and how long he'd been doing it. And I said, hey, what the heck? And Nick, do you mind if I come on a day off, one of my days off at work, and kind of watch what you do? And he didn't hesitate. He said, sure, absolutely. You come on in any day. And, you know, it's funny, you know, sometimes you think you have life figured out, and then, you know, you get an opportunity like that. And I go in there and get to watch him on a practice day. And honestly, man, within 20, 30 minutes of being in there, I'm like, this is it. This is me. I could see myself doing this for a long time. And that was how it started. You know, I spent some time with Nick, and I applied to college in Ontario. It's an athletic therapy program in Sheridan College. And yeah, it just kind of took off from there. That experience with the St. John's Maple Leafs turned into an opportunity to be a student therapist with the Hamilton Bulldogs, Montreal's affiliate. Like most people on the East Coast, you either cheer for the red, white, and blue, or you cheer for the blue and white. And I'm a diehard Habs guy. So that was an awesome experience to start. And, you know, that kind of opened some doors into junior hockey. And I mean, I've been doing this now. This will be my 11th season in Edmonton and my 12th season overall. So, you know, it all kind of right place, right time, man. I've got an uncanny ability just to fall in with the right people at the right time. And yeah, it's led to some incredible opportunities, and it's led to, you know, some incredible stories too. So
I'm a huge Maple Leafs fan. So I got to ask, I'm also a Terry Ryan fan. Were you in St. John's with the team while Terry was there in 99, 2000?
No, my primary time spent with the Leafs, as a student, trainer, therapist, was the last season that they had in St. John's before they moved to become the Toronto Marlies. So they had a really good team that year, a lot of good young players, and, you know, selfishly would have liked to have, you know, been able to experience a long playoff run, you know, not only for myself, but for the city and for the people that supported that franchise for so long. But, you know, it just wasn't meant to be. And, yeah, it was, again, it started me on the journey that I'm on right now, and forever grateful for that opportunity. So
I'm currently with a junior team myself here in the Maritimes, Cole Harbour, where MacKinnon and Crosby are from. And a friend of mine's been with the AUS St. Mary's Huskies the last number of years, and he started in junior A, and all of a sudden Trevor Steinberg called him, and there was a position opening, and so he took it. And still to this day, hey, if the Growlers ever called me or called Mike, I don't think we could hesitate for one second. I think we'd be on that train right to Newfoundland. And it's unbelievable that, I know they had an AHL team, now they have an East Coast team, but it gave you that opportunity to find your calling, find your whatever you want to call it. And I'm in the same position. I'm loving what I do, and I've said this countless amount of times, where I believe COVID's been a blessing. It's just allowed me to kind of sit home, think what I want to actually do, and help the Cole Harbour Colts, help a team, help. And we're very lucky. We're now, like, I think we're on a third restart. We started October 30th. It stopped November 30th. Now we're on a third restart. So being at the rink the other day, it was crazy. No fans. We're still playing, but the compete level is still there. And how is everything in Edmonton? Are you guys practicing? I know AUS is practicing in Halifax, and Mike Fiennes is balls to the wall. He's busy 60 hours a week, and he's still going at it, even though there's no games. I believe AUS hockey is the same as the East Coast League, and there's lots to do. And are you in the similar boat? Are you keeping busy? Like, I know we'll talk about the World Juniors, which ended January 5th, but when you came back after the tournament, how's life been in Edmonton?
Well, you know, I'm fortunate to work, you know, where I work and to work for who I work for, with, you know, a great general manager and a great coaching staff and support staff. And I know we'll talk about the tournament after, but, you know, it's a big commitment, right? To your family, to your club team, to leave at that time of year. And this year, especially in the middle of the pandemic, was an extra layer to it. But, they did give me some downtime after, which I'm very thankful for. It was great to be able just to hang out at home and reintroduce myself to my wife and reintroduce myself to my dog after being away for so long again. And, it's been, for me, it's been busy. And it's been busy probably, I would say, Jamie, since about May or June. Been fortunate enough to be asked to be a part of a committee that helped put together a return to play protocol for the Western Hockey League that, you know, through all of our shared experiences and through watching other leagues and other teams go through, and other sports for that matter, you know, go through life during a pandemic. There's no playbook for sports in a pandemic. When you think you have it all figured out, COVID throws you a curveball and you got to adapt and adjust. And so through it all, we recently got approval, thankfully through Alberta Health and through the Alberta government, to begin a return to play process here for our Alberta-based WHL teams. If everything goes well, we should be starting on February 26th. But part of that, part of our protocol is a mandatory isolation period for all players and staff for each of the clubs here in Alberta. So right now, just quickly checking my calendar, I'm on day 6 of isolation. And you know what? It's honestly, when you think about 12 to 14 days in an isolation or quarantine type environment, your mind immediately goes to, man, this is going to be long. Oh, these days are going to be so long. What are we going to do? Like, how am I going to pass the time? And to our staff's credit, and by extension, our players, the buy-in has been incredible, man. Like, I run workouts for the guys every morning for about an hour over Zoom. Our coaches are doing meetings with them, going over video and systems. We have a social hour for them every night where, you know, they can get on, they can play poker, they can play cards, they can just hang out and be teenagers. I know amongst themselves as a group, they've organized, you know, online NHL tournaments. They're playing Call of Duty together. They're even though they're apart, and this is where dealing with this for 11 months, like we talked about earlier about being on Zoom and everything being virtual, it allows them to be together without physically being together, right? So that's where we're at right now. We're almost halfway through this isolation period. And yeah, we hopefully get on the ice on February 12th or 13th. And yeah, we'll try and keep it going from there. I mean, we know there's going to be challenges along the way, undoubtedly, but we feel that we're going to be able to put our players' safety and our staff safety, at the forefront and hopefully have some success in regards to getting the season off the ground and continuing to have it go. So
do you got an idea of how many games that may happen when the WHL restarts?
Yeah, right now we're scheduled to play 24 games. So basically we're going to play every weekend, every Friday, Saturday. We're going to play the same team in a weekend. So if we do have a COVID issue or COVID concern, then there's only two teams involved instead of, you know, potentially four if we're playing different opponents each. But a lot of hard work and went in behind the scenes, and we were lucky enough to have some people consult with us from the outside who'd worked with, the NHL, the CFL, the IIHF bubbles. So, you know, we feel that we have a really good plan in place, and it's going to allow our players an opportunity to finally, you know, after almost a full calendar year, finally get back together and play the game that they love. And for us, I mean, I've been spoiled. I've been able to be a part of two hockey events, you know, during COVID. But, you know, for our staff, for us to be able to get back together again and for us to be able to be back in the environment that we love and doing the things we love every day, I think is key, right?
Did the WHL, as you're part of the WHL, did they look at the Q League and see how they were going? Because right now we've got PEI, St. John and Moncton are out of the picture right now because of New Brunswick. They're in, I believe they're in code red, so it's quite a mess in New Brunswick right now. So right now it's only Halifax, Cape Breton, and PEI playing however many times. So did you guys look at that and say, hey, like, this is how they're doing it, maybe we can kind of do the same thing?
Yeah, and for sure we looked at other leagues and you know, things they were successful in and things that they had some challenges in. you know, and it's not just limited to junior hockey. I mean, obviously, you've seen all the pro sports have had their challenges with COVID. But I think what we've decided to do here in our league, you know, is going to set us up, hopefully, for success this season. And we're unfortunate in that we have such a huge geographical area to pull from. I mean, we've got teams across four provinces and two states, and we're having to deal with, you know, multiple provincial health authorities and the state health authorities. So I think switching, you know, from an Eastern and Western model into more of a regional Alberta, BC, you know, Washington State, US, and Saskatchewan, Manitoba model, I think allows us to hopefully, you know, have some success in getting this started and getting it finished. But again, I mean, this thing, as we've seen, Jamie's been so unpredictable, and it's there's curveball after curveball. And, you know, it's like Bobby the Brain Heenan, or I think it was Roddy Piper. Say, once you think you got all the answers, I change all the questions. So, I mean, COVID does that to us too, right? Like when we think from a medical standpoint, we've got it all figured out, inevitably something comes up. So, you know, having contingency plans in place and having a solid protocol, you know, across our league that we can then translate down to divisional setups and regional setups, I think is definitely going to be a huge advantage. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to get it going, and hopefully, you know, we can remain safe and remain healthy and get these kids a season, because I mean, ultimately, that this is what it's all about. It's getting these guys back on the ice. It's giving them a chance to develop. It's giving guys who are in their draft year a chance to have some extra viewings by scouts. It's giving our 20-year-old players a potential opportunity to showcase their skills to maybe go play pro, or, you know, to get a different CIS opportunity. So it's probably, although it's going to be the shortest season from a game played standpoint, I think it's probably going to be the most important season our league has seen in quite some time.
I hope you guys play for the sake, like you just said, the prospects that have the potential to be drafted in this upcoming NHL draft. When that draft happens, I'm not sure. I know everyone across Canada wants to see Connor Bedard play. He plays for the Regina Pats. And I'll allow, you know, I follow Rod Peterson a lot on the Rod Peterson show, and I follow them a lot, and I've kind of just stood back and allowed them to talk, because I know everyone in Saskatchewan, BC, I've got friends with the Langley Trappers in BC, and, you know, we're on the East Coast. We've got our own teams to kind of worry about. So enough COVID talk for right now. One question I wanted to ask before we get into World Juniors and maybe some more in the WHL, is it safe to say when teams are on buses, they gel a lot quicker, like that there's a camaraderie? And we just experienced it last weekend. I had my first bus trip with the junior team that I'm with, and I believe that the team came together, and we got to know each other. Is that a safe thing to say, where when teams are on buses, they come together a little bit better?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, not only from a travel standpoint, but I mean, even just to get your team back together in some type of training environment on the ice or off the ice, it's key. And, you know, we're returning a lot of our core players to our club this year, and those guys have stepped up in a huge way already virtually, you know, through these Zoom meetings and video meetings that we're having, and they're really helping these young guys along. But you're right, until you get back in person, you really don't get that opportunity to bond and to gel, right? Everyone loves that term, gelling as a team, right? Coming together as a team. And it'll be interesting to see that happen. I mean, obviously, while everybody's wearing masks and while everybody is social distancing and stuff, I mean, just because you're wearing a mask and you're 6 feet away from your buddy in the room doesn't mean that you still can't chirp them and do what happens in dressing rooms and bring that sense of normalcy back. And, you know, we've had a conversation lots throughout this whole pandemic. And I mean, ultimately, we're all used to doing those things right now, right? Like, we're all used to wearing masks when we go out. We're all used to social distancing and so on and so forth. But none of that is new. So really, you're coming back into an environment that you love already with these good, you know, COVID habits built in. So it's a recipe for success, I think. And, you know, I know our guys are itching to get back, you know, together at the rink and workouts. And and stuff like that. So it'll be really cool to see them kind of get back together finally after, well, almost a full year apart.
No, 100%. And I don't see a difference pre-COVID. We lost a couple guys last year, right around March. We were done anyways. March 10th, I believe, we got knocked out in the first round. And after that, yeah, COVID hit. But I haven't seen a change in our team. The last two games were one on the road, one at home. And it doesn't even seem like COVID is going around this world. The guys are playing the systems that the coaches want them to play. And, hey, if you don't want to buy into the coach's system and if you don't get along with people, there's other options for you. But we've been cruising despite COVID. But I want to ask now, Brian, your World Junior experience. You were part of that Team Canada in Buffalo. Is that correct?
Yeah. So that was the Buffalo year was, what my wife refers to me is my World Junior hat trick. So that was the third year in a row that I'd been selected to be a part of the Program of Excellence and to work with the National Men's Junior Program. And, first and foremost, it's an unbelievable experience to represent your country, whether you're an athlete or you're a staff member or you're a coach or you're a therapist or you're a team manager or whatever, right? It's unbelievable. And, you know, it's an experience and a responsibility that, you know, neither myself nor anybody who gets the opportunity to wear those colors take lightly. So, it was a bucket list item for me, when I started my journey in athletic therapy and hockey, was to work for Team Canada. And, you know, that first year in Helsinki was an unbelievable experience. From a bucket list standpoint, to be able to be at that tournament, in Europe, to see how many Canadian fans travel, you know, at that time of year to be a part of that tournament was insane. I mean, it felt like we had home games in Helsinki. We had that much support there. And, you know, we didn't have a great showing that year. But, you know, I was asked to come back the next year in the Toronto-Montreal year. We had a fantastic team. We had a great group of coaches and trainers and staff. And, you know, ultimately it came down to the shootout against the Americans, and we know how that ended. So you get the opportunity to come back a third time, and we return almost our entire staff and a real good group of core players from that previous year. And man, like that feeling that you get when you win, and you're on that blue line and you're shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm with your players and your staff, and you're all belting old Canada out at the top of your lungs is incredible. And, you know, I tell people I get chills just thinking about it. Right. And I mean, that, along with winning a Memorial Cup, I think that's probably my proudest moment that I've had in my professional career to this point. And, to be able to do it again this year was incredible. And to be able to do it in the building that I work in every day and in the city I live in, and it added a little special element to it. And we had such a great group of guys this year and a great staff and a great group of coaches that, you know, it's disappointing it ended the way it did, but that's what happens in international hockey. I mean, you're one bounce away from glory or, you know, from failure. And, I think there'd be a lot of players that potentially could return from that team next year. And I know, having seen it before, there's an extra level of drive and an extra level of passion that comes with those guys that come back after suffering a stinging loss like that the next year, that they have that big chip on their shoulder and they're like, yeah, you got us once, you're not going to get us again. So it's incredible, man. And it's something that I'm very lucky to have done. And I hope to have an opportunity to do again at some point.
No, I know Team Canada would love to have you, especially with all your experience. And I'm a Blackhawks fan as well. In that and you may get this question a lot, I'm not sure, but I'm going to ask about the Kirby Dach situation. I'm a huge Blackhawks fan. Now we all know he's out. He's probably got maybe a month or so left in his recovery. But seeing that on TV, I can't really describe how I felt, but I'm like, oh, like, because people talked about the Lafreniere situation and New York didn't want to give up Lafreniere because he would have maybe possibly got hurt. And lo and behold, Doc goes out in the preseason game and he jammed his wrist, and we won't get into details, but how did your team like, just explain to the offside viewers how that all went down. And I know everyone in Canada, like, just their heart sank to the bottom of the floor. They didn't have to be Blackhawk fans. It was devastating to see. And just tell me how it all went down when he came off the ice, and just maybe reveal some of the procedures that happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, without getting into any, you know, personal, medical details on that injury, I think what you see in a case like that, especially with your captain, is it becomes a rallying point for your club. And it becomes something that a team that's already tight becomes tighter because of that, because they see their captain who, you know, is a heart and soul guy. He was so good to all the players in the room, so good to all the staff. He's such a mature guy, brought such an unreal approach, to our program coming back from the NHL. And, you know, when you see a guy like that get injured, who plays that role, you know, your leader, it definitely brings your team together very, very quickly. And it's a united cause that you know, let's win it for Kirby. And, we know how badly Kirby wanted to be a part of the tournament, and in his own way, he stayed involved behind the scenes. You know, he was in constant contact with his teammates. You know, he made sure that if they needed someone to talk to, he would talk to them. And, you know, he continued to be that leader, even though he wasn't able to be that leader on the ice. And it was pretty, you know, out of a serious incident like that and a long-term injury, it was interesting to see how mature he remained and how much of a leader he remained and how much pride he continued to take in being the captain of the team, even though he physically wasn't able to go to battle with his teammates. And, you know, one thing that we made sure to do was leave his jersey and his stall hung up throughout the whole tournament. So guys, we always had that presence in the room, right? He wasn't physically there, but he was there. And yeah, He's a great guy. Yeah, I've had the opportunity to work with Kirby a couple times now through, top prospects games or different Hockey Canada events. And, you know, he's from just down the road here in Fort Saskatchewan. And he's a good guy, man. Chicago's got a great young leader there. And he's got the opportunity, obviously, in that organization to learn from some very, very successful people and some very successful leaders, right? And Duncan Keith and Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and those guys and Brent Seabrook, and they're lucky to have them. And, you know, it's easy to say, like, you never want to see anybody get hurt, but especially your captain in an event like that, it's tough. It's a tough one. But he handled it incredibly well. And I wish him all the best in his recovery, and hopefully he's on the ice soon. And I know he's in good hands there in Chicago. So,
no, teams definitely have to go through a diversity. And like I just mentioned, it was tough to see Doc go down, but I know another player wasn't able to fill his shoes, but everyone's got to step up and play a possible role like Doc did. And it's unfortunate the outcome that happened at the end of the tournament, but, you know, we're all proud with silver, and you guys can't hang your heads just because you won silver. It was a great accomplishment, and you brought home a great experience. But is there anything else you'd like to add in your World Junior experience and throughout the last number of years? And you just mentioned your Memorial Cup win. How special was that? And how special was that Oil Kings team that you were part of? I believe it was 2014 that happened.
Yeah, just to quickly touch on the Hockey Canada experiences. I mean, they do such a good job looking after their players and looking after their staff. And you know what? Making sure that the families are well taken care of and they're well looked after too, because it's a huge commitment for everybody, right? Christmas is a time where everybody gets together and you spend a lot of time with your family. And, Hockey Canada does a fantastic job in engaging the families in what we do every year, and especially in the COVID year. You know, families sent surprise messages of congratulations and best wishes to the players. We had our staff families all sent in messages and stuff. So it's nice to have that little extra motivation. But, you know, turning the clock back a little bit to the successful run that we had as Oil Kings between the 2012, 13, and 14 seasons. I mean, it was a time in our league where, I mean, you have the same two teams playing the final for 3 years in a row, You know, we beat Portland in game seven in 2012 on home ice at Rexall Place, which was it was crazy, man. Like, we had about 14,000 fans in there on a Sunday afternoon in May. And, you know, you're on the ice waiting for the trophy presentation and you look up and you see all the banners from the 80s Oilers and all the retired numbers. You pinch yourself. You're like, is this really happening? And, no, the next year we had an even better team, I think, the next year. But unfortunately, we lost a few guys to injury early in the playoffs. And Portland knocked us out in six games. And then the following year, we end up playing Portland again. I joke with their training staff there that we basically played a best of three series. And we won the first one. They won the second one. And the third one, we had I'll never forget this game as long as I live. Game six at home again, Sunday afternoon, Mother's Day. Rink is just rocking. We have a 2-2-goal leads, blow the lead twice, end up losing in overtime. Have to quick turnaround to go back to Portland to play game seven. No visiting team had ever won game seven of a Western Hockey League championship on the road. And we did it that night. So that was incredible, you know, to be able to do that in that environment against that team. You know, with all the adversity we had faced 24 hours before, I mean, you blow two goal leads twice in a game. And, you know, the average team, I think, would buckle under that pressure in game seven and get run out of the rink. But our guys just were like, no, there's no way we're losing this. And, you know, we carry into London. All we heard the whole time in London was, you know, Guelph, Guelph, Guelph. And Guelph had a fantastic team that year. And they handed it to us when we played them in the first game. I'll give them credit. They were really good. They got on us. But we continued to get better throughout that tournament. I mean, we had two incredible games against Val d'Or. One we lost in double OT. And we play them again in the semifinal in triple OT. Curtis Lazaro scores, you know, probably the most famous goal in Oil Kings history. Has one of the best celebrations as he's just skating down the ice by himself, pulls his glove off and wipes the stressful sweat off his forehead. And, you know, we get Guelph again in the final. And the game didn't start very well for us. We're down early and we're killing penalties early. But the strength of our team that year was our resolve and our unwillingness to ever give in and cave in when things started getting hard around us. And we had an incredible group of leaders on that team that year. You know, Griffin Reinhardt, Curtis Lazar, Henrik Samuelsson, Mitch Moraz, you know, Tristan Jarry, our starting goalie. Like, those guys were unbelievable. And, you know, they we had a little bit of a driving force behind us, too. I mean, the summer prior, a former teammate of ours, Christian Spels, an Oiler draft pick, you know, he drowned in a tragic accident in Latvia. And a lot of our core guys have played with Pelsey, and, you know, our model that year became play for Pelsey. And we made sure his jersey went everywhere we went. And, you know, you hear those you know, uncanny stories about the guardian angel or that little good luck charm or someone's watching over you. And, man, I'm telling you, I have no doubt that that guy was – he was on our shoulders that whole year and especially that tournament. And one of the coolest things that happened – on the bus, you talked about bus rides earlier. So the bus ride back from the rink in London to the hotel, Mitch Moraz got a text message from Christian's dad in Latvia, who had been watching the game and had watched, you know, followed us the whole season. And he read it aloud on the bus. Like, our guys were hooting and hollering, and Mitch is like, hey, I got a text to share with you guys. And he read it from Mr. Pelson and said, thank you so much for honoring my son's memory. And, man, the bus just fell silent. And it was at that point, I think, our guys realized just how important it was that we were able to do that, win or lose, but we were able to honor his memory that whole season. And it definitely was a driving force towards our success.
I asked Ryan, the assistant coach, during our bus ride last week, and I asked him, I said, you know, how fun are the bus rides? And he's like, man, it helps bring teams together. And I really believe, and I already explained this, but it helps just bringing guys together, and it's the junior experience. I've been on teams before where there's no bus ride. You're basically finding your own way to the rink, or your parents drive you to the rink, and you go to the rink and they're all sitting in the locker room, not talking to each other. And I'm now seeing, like, the guys are all like gelling, they're talking about whatever. And that's the whole junior experience. And I know you've experienced that too. And I want to get into Dawson Mercer and Alex Newhook. How special was it to have them as Newfoundlanders on Team Canada? I know they were on TSN there and they were kind of providing us Canadians with some Newfoundland slang, but how special was it? Was it extra special to have Newhook and Mercer in that locker room, especially being from Newfoundland?
Yeah, it was. When I look back on the event, it's definitely one of the highlights, you know, being able to share that opportunity with Alex and with Dawson. And I mean, as far as young men go, you really couldn't ask for two better ambassadors for the province and for the sport of hockey in Newfoundland. And I mean, their work ethic on and off the ice is second to none. You know, they're unbelievable teammates. They're the type of player that people gravitate towards. I mean, you know, Alex is a little bit more of the serious one of the two. But, I mean, Dawson, I don't know if that guy's ever had a bad day in his life. And, you know, he's always smiling. He's always upbeat. And that's infectious, right? And when you have that type of personality, regardless of where someone's from, but when you have that type of personality in your room, it's just, it drives your room, right? That you become the motor for the pulse. And those two kids were unbelievable, man. And, you know, we had some good laughs along the way. And, you know, when... I joked about with the two of them that, you know, fellas, we're going to have it like a Newfoundland kitchen party or something some night here. and we never had the opportunity to do it, but with the event being where it was and being in Edmonton and, you know, with me being an everyday employee essentially in that facility and knowing the guys that were doing the music and doing the game presentation. And I don't know if you could pick up on it on TV, but I had mentioned about this kitchen party and they said, okay, well, we'll play something for you. And then they started playing this this version of Heave Away by the Fables that had a little bit of a techno kind of twist on the end of it. But when they played it the first night, Merce kind of looked back at me. He's, can you believe they're playing this? And then next thing you know, everyone is like banging their sticks on the boards. They're kicking the boards. It became kind of something. So they played it every game from that point on. And you know, with the night that Newey scored when he came back after he missed a couple of games, the DJ played the Islander, which is another, you know, classic Newfoundland and Labrador song. And that was our kitchen party, man. Like we had a couple of good tunes and everybody was kind of, stomping along to it. But it was an incredible experience and to be able to share it with those two guys and just seeing, how important it was to everybody in the country because of what we'd all gone through with COVID. But, you know, especially back home in Newfoundland, I mean, we all know, I mean, the times are tough there. I mean, the economy's not great. And I mean, we're not a political show or anything here, but, you know, it provided a spark and a bit of light in an otherwise dark time for people coast to coast. And to be able to share that with those two kids is something that I'll never forget. And, you know, we still keep in touch regularly and, you know, hopefully there's an opportunity if the Atlantic bubble ever ceases to exist and we don't have to quarantine for 14 days, I'll get home again at some point. We can get together for a round of golf and reminisce a bit about the tournament. So
when I know Newhook is with Boston College and Mercer's doing his thing, when do you see those two guys? Maybe I know Newhook is maybe will be in the league sooner or faster than Mercer with the Colorado Avalanche, but when do you see both of those guys cracking each of their NHL teams lineups? Newhook with the Colorado Avalanche and Mercer's with the New Jersey Devils. Is it safe to say you can see Mercer in the league faster than Newhook faster than Mercer with New Jersey?
Yeah, maybe just from the age difference standpoint, but one thing about those guys and a lot of these guys that play, you know, high level hockey and play in the national junior program, there's a willingness there's role acceptance, right? So all these guys come to us and they're their number one gunners on every team they play. And they adapt to maybe playing a third line role or a fourth line role or a 13th forward role or a penalty killing role when they'd normally be on the power play and so on. So I think having had that experience through Hockey Canada and, you know, learning that role acceptance, I think guys like those guys, when they do make the transition to pro, probably make it easier because they have a willingness to accept whatever role is given to them, right? They, not everyone's going to drop into a first line setting in the NHL. So as long as, you know, you're willing to accept your role and kind of grind it out, I think it would be, you'll probably see him sooner rather than later, right? Like, I look at a guy like, you know, Tyson Jost played the World Junior team a couple of years ago, and he's a regular guy with Colorado now, right? And he accepted his role, and he works hard night in and night out. And there's a lot of traits of that guy in a guy like Alex Newhook and in a guy like Merce. And yeah, I think Newfoundland will be splitting their allegiance between the Avalanche and the Devils here for at least the foreseeable future, I think.
Without going on HockeyDB, who in the Oil Kings dressing room was the biggest NHL star? Who's in the NHL right now? And I wouldn't say biggest star. Everyone that walks into that room is equal. No one really stands out the most. But which guy played with the Oil Kings that's doing well in the NHL right now?
I would say, you know, I look at a guy like Tristan Jarry. I mean, he's worked it. He's put his time in. He's worked his way into a starting goalie role in Pittsburgh. You know, Laurent Bressois, another goaltender, was with Winnipeg.
Okay.
I mean, he's grinded his way to the show, and he's in a good spot there. And, you know, Curtis Lazar, he's having a little bit of a rebirth this season, which is great to see. But, you know, through it all, I think the guy that's probably been the most consistent guy that we've had go to the show has been Mark Pesek. You know, he was our captain in 2012. You know, he was jokingly referred to as a Prius in Florida by Keith Yandel because he was a hybrid. He played D one night, he played forward the next. So, you know, Marky's a great guy, and he's in Dallas now, I believe. And, you know, those are some really good examples of guys that have come through our doors in the last, you know, 10 years that I've been here. And we've got some good guys coming too now, like Jake Neighbors, first round pick to the St. Louis Blues. You know, you got Dylan Gunther and Sebastian Kosa, who could, you know, both potentially be first round draft picks in this year's draft, whenever that draft is going to be held. And so there's been a lot of tradition come through our organization, and there's a lot of really good players that are here now and that are on the way through. And it really speaks to the culture that our general manager, Kurt Hill, and our coaching staff, and Brad Lauer and Luke Pierce have helped establish. You know what? We're spoiled though, Jamie, don't get me wrong. I mean, when you work in a facility and your dressing room is across the hall from an NHL team, and, you know, in simpler times, you could go out and you could watch a morning skate and watch Connor and Leon twirl around, or, wow, you know, Sidney Crosby when he comes to town and stuff like that. I mean, our guys are definitely in a different environment than most junior teams. But I also think they realize how special it is to be in that environment, and they don't take that for granted, and they soak it up like sponges. And that's why I think we've been able to produce some good, and are continuing to produce some good NHL talent with the Oil Kings.
No, 100%. And before I forget, I want to ask, how was it playing in a bubble, being on the bench, being part of the World Juniors with no fans? Like, with no fans, was that, did that have an impact on the game at all? Like, I know it was in Canada, and maybe we could say, well, Team Canada lost because they were in front of their home fans, or they were on Canadian soil, and that maybe put some pressure on. No Kirby Doc, that was also said, and I don't believe no fans had an impact on that game. We all know, like, if we follow hockey, we know how that game ended up. We know what happened, and hey, silver's not a bad thing, but at the end of the day, how was the atmosphere with no fans? Like, how did the team react? Like, did the guys say, oh, I wish there was fans to jack me up? Or, like, how was the atmosphere with no fans?
I think, for me, having spent time in the NHL playoff bubble and helping those teams out, I kind of knew what to expect. And, you know, we had our sport performance coach, mental performance coach, Ryan Hamilton from New Brunswick. Yep. He worked at the Tampa Bay Lightning and still does work for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So he knew what to expect. So I think what our players really embraced was creating that creating their own energy, right? And creating their own buzz and relying on each other to kind of keep that flow going all game. It's a different animal, man. When you're in a building as big as Rogers Place and there's nobody in the stands, it can feel cavernous at times. But when you commit to a process and you commit to kind of creating your own energy and creating your own buzz and you know, driving that emotional side of things yourselves, I think in a way it'll never replace what a full building can do, and it'll never replace the energy that 18,500 can bring you any night. But I think our guys did a very good job of embracing that and driving that emotional energy themselves. And, you know, our coaches were unbelievable with it. I mean, us as trainers, we found ourselves at times probably a little bit more vocal than we would be on a normal year. And, you know, we all had our little part to play in kind of keeping guys up and keeping things going. So it was, and they had some crowd noise pumped in, like at certain points of the game, when you could feel momentum shifting, you know, the guys upstairs would dial up some crowd noise, and, you know, it was interesting. But man, that goal, the horn is loud in an empty building. It's too bad we didn't get to hear it a couple more times in the gold medal game there.
So you were actually a staff member on the top prospects game for Team Cherry. How is Team Cherry? How is Don Cherry in person?
Where was the game? The game was in Calgary.
I'll go back to the email there, but the 2014 prospects game.
So we had that year, it was in Calgary. Our coaches were Paul Reinhardt. I can't remember the other guy's name. But Don didn't typically come out west. He would just do the Eastern games and that.
Really
being able to be a part of that type of game and having, you know, 40 of the best prospects in all of North America was an incredible experience. And I got to do that again in Red Deer a few years later, and you know, again, another unbelievable experience. And, you know, it's fun, right? I mean, you junior hockey opens a lot of doors for you, and again, right place, right time, around the right people, and you know, you get these opportunities, and it's fun. It's definitely fun.
Man, what a treat. I'm from Newfoundland myself. I don't know if you can tell. I lost my accent because I moved away from Gander when I was 3 years old, and I have a good friend, Mike Fines, who's from somewheres up in Labrador, somewheres, and basically you had to move away from the island. I moved away when I was three, so I got a head start from everybody else, but man, I got a hold of you there a couple months ago, and I was like itching. I was like, man, I can't wait to talk to Brian. I know it's he's part of the Team Canada and doing his WHL thing, but do you got anything to say to anybody in junior or maybe in the queue, or, you know, that want to move up? Like, what's your words of encouragement for myself, especially in where I'm in junior, the A and junior B level, for words of encouragement?
Yeah, and I think what you need to do is, I mean, reach out to people, get to know people. The better connected you can make yourself, the more aware you will eventually be of opportunities in other leagues and with other teams. And, you know, the hockey world, everyone likes to think the hockey world is big, but in reality, the hockey world is small. And, if you continue to work hard and, you know, you're honest and you're well-liked by your players and you're well-liked by your coaches and, you know, you're good at what you do, opportunity will present itself to you. The key is to stay patient. And, I actually had a conversation with, a college class yesterday at my old college in Sheridan College, and you know, the one thing I told those students was, I mean, don't be afraid to say no either, right? Like, don't take a job just to take a job. Take a job because you feel it's the right fit for you at the time. And you know, I shared some info with them. Like, I've had other opportunities in other leagues that I turned down, you know, in pro hockey and at the National League level, that, you know, I'm glad I had the opportunity, to be a part of the process. But ultimately for me at the time, it was no was the right answer. You know, do I have regrets about it? No, I'm 100% confident in my decisions and I never look back on anything like that. But, you know, hopefully an opportunity presents itself for me again at some point down the road. But for people that are aspiring to get to the major junior level and beyond, you know, make your connections, work hard, you know, build a good reputation and a good network. And, you know, when opportunity knocks, answer the door. And, you know, if you don't like it, don't be afraid to say no. And if you like it, jump at it, man. Like, you gotta, life's too short, right? So.
And the St. John's Maple Leafs were in St. John's and you were in Newfoundland, that opened the door as an AHL team. And I'm dying to move up, but I there's a window not closed yet here in Cole Harbour. So I'm taking the bull by the horns and inspired by you. And I follow Nate LaPointe, who was on the Team USA. He's with Wisconsin. And like I just said, Mike Fiennes is a true inspiration. He's almost 60s, but mid 50s, and close with Doug over in University of Western there in Ontario. And they've been true inspirations. Like you just said, connect with people, get to know people. And I don't know how life would be if COVID didn't happen, because I'd probably still working 60 hours a week away in New Brunswick. And now that I'm settled, I'm kind of doing this podcast thing with Offside and helping my team, or helping the Colts a lot more. I'm going to share this interview with Clarkie and the gents over at the Rod Peterson Show. And Clark Monroe and Max have a great thing going with the Rod Squad. So I do want to ask, do you have any good Regina Pats, Edmonton Oil Kings stories going into their barn, or them coming into your barn? I know they're in Regina there, Saskatchewan. So I just wanted to ask you if you had a possible story between the Regina Pats.
I actually have a really good one comes to mind. It's not a long one, but it's one of my very first road trip with the Edmonton Oil Kings when I got hired here in 2010. Well, that's a long time ago. We went to Regina, and that night it was, now I had a year previous in the league in Tri-City in Kennewick, but this was my first time working, you know, junior hockey in Canada, essentially. And we played the Pats, and man, it was a good game. It was getting a little bit chippy. You could see it coming. You knew it was going to happen. We had a line brawl and we had a goalie fight at center ice at the Brand Center. And I remember looking down the bench at my equipment guy, like, yep. Yeah. This is junior hockey, man. This is the stuff that you've seen old videos of and you've heard old stories of. So, you know, my first road trip with the Oil Kings and the Pats, we've got a goalie fight at center ice. Our goalie was Cam Lanigan. And I want to say the Pats goalie was Damien Ketlow. And I believe he may have dislocated his shoulder when he fell at the end of the fight. So there was so much going on. You didn't know where to look. It was just absolute pandemonium. It was like the WWE Royal Rumble come to life on skates. And yeah, that was my first memory of playing a game at the Brand Center. So that's a good one there for you.
Maybe Rod Peterson was covering that game, but who knows? I wanted to get that in there because they're situated in Regina, Saskatchewan. And but man, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. I know you're in quarantine, so I'm glad I caught you when you did. And let's connect up again down the road. I'll anytime I want to talk, I know I can hit you up on Twitter. How can people find you on Twitter?
Yeah, so Twitter, you can get me at @B_Cheeseman. And then I believe the same thing on Instagram. I should know that and should be somewhat social media savvy in this day and age. But yeah, you know, reach out. If there's anybody that's watching this or listening to this that, you know, is an aspiring athletic therapist or wants to get involved in junior hockey or at a lower level, I mean, my inbox is always open. And if I can't give you the right answer, I hopefully I can point you in the direction of someone who can. So I've been very fortunate to meet a lot of good people in this game coast to coast. And, you know, I think I've gotten to the point in my career right now, Jamie, as you can see by the gray in the beard here, that it's time for me to give back a little bit too, and then to help some other people.
No, I'm 37 years old and the equipment manager in the junior junior level, man, it you don't have to be an athletic therapist, or you just, if you just give back to your community. And, you know, I'm from Sackville, Nova Scotia. I grew up watching the Junior B Blazers, and never thought in a million years I'd be in Cole Harbour. But, man, the group of Jonathan Boone actually played in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League many years ago, and he's from Belle Island. Justin is from Belle Island, and Ryan's from Newfoundland as well. And to have three or four Newfoundlanders on the team, man, it's something special. And yeah, it's inspiring to see you and everybody else. And someday I'll have my own dressing room, where I'll be able to kind of go to a dressing room. Right now, where you kind of share a room, and I'm jealous. I'm always jealous of where you get to work and where Mike gets to work. But, you know, like you just said, patience. And I've heard so many stories. The gentleman now with the Halifax Mooseheads, Alex Ryan, he was signing up for a course at St. of X and saw an ad on the board. And he's like, oh, student equipment guy. And he signed up, and bam, it blew up from there. And you got to be in the right place, connect with the right people, and your time will come. And I'm glad you used the word patience, because, like, some days I don't have patience, and I want Mike to get that job at the Newfoundland Growlers. And I know